Hi, everyone. Judge Andrew Napolitano here for Judging Freedom. Today is Tuesday, July 9th, 2024. Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski joins us now. Colonel Karen, it's a pleasure, my dear friend. Thank you for coming back to us. You have a great piece out this week, which is at Judge Knapp and elsewhere, called Biden's Potemkin Legacy. Of course, we all know about Potemkin. No one really knows if that happened or not, but it basically was a scheme whereby one of Catherine the Great's assistants was creating fake villages so that when she processed through a part of Russia, she would think she was being cheered on by prosperous people that were living there. And it turned out nobody was living there. It was just scenery that was moved from place to place. Nobody knows if it happened, but it has come to stand for the phoniness, the lies that the government tells about itself. Okay. With that as a background, what does the West have to show for all of its post-World War II wars, particularly the United States?
Well, we have accumulated a great deal of debt, public debt, to the extent that it really can't be paid back. Inflation will eventually erode some of it. Fiscal monetary collapse can happen. I mean, we have tons of debt, so that's one of the things we have reaped from it. But really, the United States has led the elimination of literally millions of people, both people that were alive and their potential descendants, never being born. You know, we have the United States legacy of war, and the Western legacy of war. We've done our share. Now, you know, obviously other countries have killed people, but we hold ourselves a little higher to that.
Well,
you know,
what did we accomplish by the Vietnam War? What did we accomplish by invading Afghanistan? What did we accomplish by invading Iraq? Nothing except death and slaughter and debt. Yeah.
Death and slaughter and debt. And we have also we've corrupted our economy and our politics in this country to the extent that they cannot be corrected. What has happened to the militarization of our politics and of our society in this country and our economy? This emphasis on weapons of war and activities of war. This has warped our, what I would consider a natural economy. It has warped it, and it can't be corrected. It's gone down the path so long that it is not something that you can correct. It actually has to fail, and we need to almost start over. This whole idea of a revolutionary change. We've got ourselves in a place in this country where we can't turn around. We cannot turn around. It must fail, and we must start again with, hopefully, some of the same ideas we started with, 230 years ago.
Why do democracies love war? Why do presidents like to kill?
That's a good question, because they all have. They all have done it. And they've all kind of celebrated it in a lot of ways. Although at the end of their lives, you find possibly some regret to what they've done. But and yet we don't elect murderers per se. I mean, we don't recruit from our, federal penitentiaries. You know, we don't go to death row and say, which one of y'all wants to be president? But we have average normal people, but it's the power. It's the power and the way that the choices are presented to them. Can we kill 500 people or we kill 500,000? Somewhere they're giving choices, but always the choices are to kill instead of, how about we can make peace this way, or then there's another way we can make peace. You know, why don't they present it like that? Because there's no money. There's no money for the way our politics are done in peace. The money is in war. It is in taking sides, accumulating influence abroad. Many of our presidents, I don't think, understand the free market at all. And they say, well, if we're friends, we can trade with this trading bloc that we've established by virtue of us supporting their wars. and being on their side, and then they'll somehow benefit us. And you know, the average American person not only is fed lies from the government, but really is in no position to change or to alter or even influence the decisions that are made at the top levels of our government. So, you know, we're stuck. We're stuck in a bad place.
We not only are stuck, we really don't even have free choices in the government. I mean, let's say that Biden doesn't leave the campaign. I mean, aside from their personalities and their friends and colleagues on the issues that matter, mass surveillance, opportunistic wars, operating the government by debt and getting deeper and deeper into debt, they are just Tweedledee and Tweedledum, especially when Prime Minister Netanyahu comes to address a joint session of Congress 2 weeks from tomorrow. You will not be able to tell the Republicans from the Democrats. They'll be falling all over each other to demonstrate to an international audience how beloved this murderer and war criminal is on the floor of the House of Representatives. Yeah, and I can't imagine that a President Trump's policies on the war in Gaza would be much different than President Biden's policies on the war in Gaza have been. So the Democrats used to be a party of peace, but not when it comes to the donor class that keeps them in office.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's where the money puts the politicians in position and keeps them there. I mean, you know, we've seen in the past, but also most recently this cycle, very aggressive spending by the Israeli lobby in particular to eliminate any candidate of either party that does not toe the Israeli line or does not fully 100% put Israeli government interests above the interest of the voter, the taxpayer of the American nation. So, you know, we have a system that works for others. It doesn't work for the average American. And, you know, this is really the appeal that Trump has. I mean, he talks about this, you know, he talks about, you know, America first, putting, you know, your interests, you're the taxpayers, you're the people that built this country, so your interests should matter. And he says this, and it's very appealing. People want to hear that. They feel that they have been ignored. But to imagine that you know, he would truly be able to lead like that is didn't happen the first 4 years very much. In fact, it was blocked at every turn, so it's hard to say what would, you know, would he be capable of? Again, the system is stacked against the American people. The governing system does not work for the American people. What we have warped our constitutional republic into does not work for the American people.
So the British government just changed dramatically from a small majority for the Conservatives to a huge majority for Labour. Mm-hmm. Prime Minister Starmer wasn't in office for 5 minutes when he announced the continuation of the policy on Ukraine.
Yeah, that's really pro-labor. That's a pro-labor policy too, isn't it?
Oh, man. Making so George, war, you know, George, 5 minutes over. George Galloway, the Dennis Kucinich of that House of Commons, although he was just voted out of office, referred to then Prime Minister Sunak and then Labour leader Starmer as two cheeks of the same backside. Only George could get away with saying that. I asked Chris if we actually had that on tape. We don't, so I don't know if he actually said it or if he wrote it, but I know it is attributed to him. But my point is, Sunak, Starmer, Trump, Biden, Republicans in the Congress, Democrats in the Congress, and in the presence of Netanyahu, they're worse than Tweedledee and Tweedledum because they're all the same on all of these things. The American public does not have a real voice. If you consider Bobby Kennedy a voice, okay, I get that. I disagree with him profoundly on Israel, but agree with him on many other things. But he can't get on the ballot because the empire has written our laws to make it nearly impossible for third-party candidates who are more ideologically pure than Republicans or Democrats to physically get on the ballot so people can physically vote for them.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. You know, it's funny with RFK Jr., they had a Democrat who was less less left, I think, more central than Bernie Sanders, who they blocked for, what was it, 4 years ago, whenever Hillary was there, 8 years ago. They had RFK. They could have used him. RFK with running as a Democrat, allowed him in and had democracy within the Democratic primaries, had they done that, we wouldn't be here today. I think Trump would be way behind in terms of a race between those two. And yet Bobby's not particularly young. He has his own handicaps, I guess, of various things, but he fits very well with the Democratic voter. And actually, because he's an honest person who is very nervous about overpowered and over-centralized government, telling us all how to live our lives every single day and night, he would have appeal to a lot of Republicans too, I think. So, and he's pro-Israel without any question. So, you know, he fills that, he's checked that box as well. And yet they didn't do that. And now the Democratic Party is just, it's funny to watch, you know, the situation that they themselves have got themselves into.
Well, the Republicans, as if to give Prime Minister Netanyahu more of a gift than their 55 plus standing ovations. Everybody knows 55 last time, and they have to make sure they do more than 55 this time, as if they were high school kids, are actually considering a draft.
Oh, yeah.
A military draft. Now, I can think of probably 8 parts of the Bill of Rights that are violated by the draft, including the 13th Amendment, which prohibits slavery.
Yep.
The country is not at war. The country has no interest in the outcome of Ukraine or Israel's slaughter. And yet they want Prime Minister Netanyahu to know that, oh, all these boys and maybe girls,
mm-hmm.
and maybe girls,
yep.
you at least volunteered between 18 and 26. They're going to be here for you, Mr. Netanyahu. Yeah. We're about to enact this legislation. Oh, and by the way, Mr. Prime Minister, no great debate on the draft. It's not a freestanding bill on the floor of the House.
Mm-hmm.
Sneaking it in to the National Defense Authorization Act, which is 600 pages long that nobody will read. People will vote for it because nobody's going to vote against the Pentagon and expect to get reelected.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal will say, oh, by the way, do you guys realize you just reenacted the draft?
Yeah. Well, you know, they have to sneak it in, right? Because there was a time when you could, in this country, conduct a draft. You know, they've done it before, and people would show up. People who were relatively well-educated by today's standards, who could read and write and function without handheld devices because they didn't have them. People would show up, and they would, even if they didn't want to be there, they would tend to do what they're told. This era is behind us. Okay, that is not the present day. So they can't. Nobody wants to go in the military, and those people that they might be able to capture through the automatic registration and then eventual draft, which is certainly what they envision. These people are not going to do what they're told. They are not going to make it through training in a successful way. They are not going to be of high quality, and it's not because. It's not because there's not, you know, that they're poor quality people, but the overall level of education, physical readiness, attitude, understanding, shared culture, all of these things are missing in the young people of today. We've done this. The government has done this, okay, through the million ways, the welfare state, the public education, everything that the government has done has reduced our ability to produce traditional soldiers, airmen, sailors, Marines. So they think the solution is we'll just get them all. We'll just round them up and they'll come do what they did 50 years ago. Then they won't. They will not do that. And we in the military, and I'm not in the military anymore, but the current military is not able to make them do what they think they'll be able to do.
What's
a disaster.
What does the current military think of its own failures and waste? I just asked... your colleague and our mutual friend, Matt Ho, whatever happened to that $300 million bridge and a floating pier that was supposed to save the Gazans from starvation? I mean, does the military, do the grunts, I'll use their phrase, the men and women who sweat and toil and have dirty fingernails and get cuts and bruises because of their work, who built this thing, what do they think when it's a dismal failure and an utter waste and it costs $330 million?
Yeah. Well, you know, we could ask them, and maybe we'll hear from some of the guys on the front lines trying to build this pier. And what they will tell you very likely is what they would have said at any previous era when things fail. They would talk about the decisions that were made that did not take into consideration the facts. Okay. They would say this was a dumb idea to begin with. There was no way we could succeed. Or we will hear stories of, yeah, we could have made this work, but the colonels and the generals and the politicians that run the military in and out of uniform refused to hear that. So they were, you know, so again, it is a leadership failure. And so the leaders in some ways sense it, but the people that serve in the military, you could ask them, and I don't care what, if it's the military or what's going on in Walmart, you need to talk to the people that work the floor because they will tell you what is happening and they their stories will inform you as to where the mistakes are.
The flip side of this is, do the people who receive all these campaign funds from the donor class actually think that they would be defeated for re-election if Joe Biden said to Netanyahu, hey, Bibi, cool it for 2 months. Our trucks are coming in. Don't stop them. They're bringing food, water, and medicine. You stop them, we're going to shoot the people that are stopping them. Do they think they'd be voted out of office if Biden did something like that? Is that their great fear?
They know, this is what they know. This is what politicians know. They know that they would have competition and they would lose money from that particular sector of the donor class, the sector that wants to support Israel's government at all cost. They know that. And I don't think most of them think beyond that, because the way you put that question, it is perfect. Of course they wouldn't lose votes. They would become amazingly popular. Did you know? Okay. And we know this, but Americans have a great mythology. And some of it, I think, is based on truth, that we are leaders, that we are strong, that we are brave and we are bold. What more brave and bold thing could we have done than what you just described? Pick up the phone. We're bringing trucks in. People are starving. Not on our watch. Not going to happen. Here's what we're doing. If you try to stop us, you're going to get knocked down. And then do it. That is American in so many ways. That is how that you know, the fact that it's a little less than diplomatic is also American. So wonderful thing to do. And they would have gained many votes. But these politicians cannot see beyond their noses, their immediate pocketbooks. They are also, they're frightened. They're very frightened. And we don't have brave people running for office. I mean, in many ways, Biden is a lesson for all of us. What is he? Well, we're not sure. He's a shell. Is he courageous? Does he understand? Does he think things through? No, he doesn't. He currently does not do that. And yet he is still our icon. He's still the top person. And in fact, they haven't figured a way to even put the 25th Amendment into play. They haven't figured out how to do that and may not do that. So, you know, we can do so much better. American people can do so much better.
When you were saying that Biden should do this and the politicians who support it will be heroes, one of the readers wrote in and said, yeah, Judge, and I believe in Santa Claus. I interpret that to mean this is not going to happen. Because they just don't have that. They don't have the courage of a Karen Kwiatkowski. They just don't. They are terrified of the donor class. Now, they put aside Biden's mental issues. Who the heck knows who's the real president of the United States? How do we know who's making these decisions? Whoever it is wants to please the Zionists, can't wait to embrace Netanyahu, and is willing to tolerate genocide in order to achieve the worst crime there is.
No, and we're not just
in order to achieve this goal.
That's right. And we're not just tolerating it. We are enabling and funding it to the tune of literally hundreds of millions of dollars. So this is a pretty bad legacy. And I think part of it is, and I mentioned in the article, just some of the names of some of the people that are involved in advising them. None of them are elected and none of them are competent to make, you know, strategic decisions like this. And none of them really put American interests first at all. In fact, if you look at the decision makers, the unelected decision makers in the Biden White House, and I'm not going to say it wasn't that way under Trump and under Obama or any other place, but they are people that do not, for whatever reason, and there are several reasons that they don't, but they do not put America first. And I think we all sense this, which is why Trump as marketer has done a great job with putting America first. This is his theme. Well, whether he does it or not, he is responding to something we all recognize, that, yeah, that we haven't been doing that for quite a long time.
So we have the negotiations for peace or a ceasefire in the Middle East being conducted by CIA and Mossad. You talk about secret and you talk about non-responsive. According to your former colleague, former deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense and former U.S. Ambassador to Saudi Arabia, the great Charles Freeman, the Biden-Blinken State Department is the least internationally respected in history, in post-World War II history. They don't even want to consider the fact that more than half the people who died on October 7th were murdered by the IDF, as if it were somehow justified because they named it after Hannibal. Still murder, whatever you're going to call it. They won't accept the report of The Lancet, the most reputable and the oldest medical journal in the world, showing that it is more likely than not that 186,000 human beings have died from bullets or shrapnel or buildings collapsing on them or starvation or dehydration or disease in Gaza. They just don't even want to talk about this stuff.
Right. Yeah. They, you know, this is their personal ideology, which doesn't put America first and in many cases puts Israel's government's current wishes first. That ideology blinds them. And really handicaps them to a great extent to seeing the truth. You know, people need ideologies, but if your ideology has strangled your ability to think and suffocated your ability to reason, which I think it has in many cases in Washington, you are of no use to yourself, much less, you know, any use to American people and to our government. I'm glad they're disrespected. They deserve nothing but contempt.
I agree with you, and maybe that's why Tony Blinken doesn't want to pick up the phone and call Sergei Lavrov. I mean, it's like a school child calling the principal. I mean, they are hardly equals intellectually and by reputation as diplomats.
Yeah,
it's maybe so that's one of the reasons that this war in Ukraine goes on for so long, because Biden badmouths Putin and they don't speak, and Blinken won't speak to Lavrov. The only two that do speak after we killed people on the Sevastopol beach Sundays ago are the Secretary of Defense and the Russian Minister of Defense, just to make sure it didn't get out of hand. I'll give you the last word, Karen.
I think one of the reasons these wars go on, Ukraine and Israel both, is that our government is not honest with us, with the people who fund this, about why they're doing what they're doing. You know, a good part of what we went to Europe to, why we're pushing NATO and why we're in Ukraine, really has to do with creating a captive energy market in Europe. You know, we didn't have to blow up the Nord Stream, but we did. Why was that part of, you know, why was that part of the war effort in Ukraine? Because really, the war effort in Ukraine the Americans have not been told why the United States is doing it. And of course, Lavrov knows, the rest of the world knows. If Biden a few years ago was sentient, he knew. So we could have talked to him, but there, you know, we don't, the American politicians and statesmen, if you call them that, they don't want to admit the truth. And you cannot have a conversation with anyone unless there is some baseline of truth in your conversation. And the American government is not just a liar. It knows nothing but lies. And it cannot be negotiated with because it doesn't recognize reality. It refuses to recognize reality. And it refuses to admit the truth of why we are doing what we're doing. I very much resource wars of grabbing. You know, and again, Gaza doesn't matter, but what does matter to Israel? The gas that's under Gazan control in the Mediterranean. And that's what they are going to take because there will be no Gazans to operate it. And you can't say that truthfully. You can't, if you're Israel's government, if you're the American government engaging in a war, it's very difficult for you to honestly say why you're doing what you're doing because the average person on the planet recognizes that that's very wrong. That's evil. It's against the Ten Commandments to steal, to covet. We know this. The whole world knows this. Our government cannot speak the truth. And
I said last word, but now I want to raise another. No, that's all right. No, it's a great answer, Karen. I want to raise another issue. Here's the Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson being harshly critical of the starvation the United States has caused in Syria. Take a listen to this. Cut number 6.
Over half of the Syrian population now suffers from food insecurity, a significant increase from its former status as a minor exporter. The United States bears an undeniable responsibility for this situation. It has been dememonstrated that under the guise of anti-terrorism, the United States seeks to exploit resources, all while discussing human rights, but violating the survival and life rights of people in other nations, claim that they want democracy, freedom, and prosperity. However, the United States should genuinely respect Syria's sovereignty, cease its unlawful military presence, and stop exploiting Syria to compensate for the harm inflicted on the Syrian people.
Yeah.
They see right through us, and so does Vladimir Putin see right through us.
Yes,
by the way, that lady is a far cry from Matt Miller and Admiral Kirby, isn't she?
Wonderful. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. And I think, I hope that people can see we have the possibility of having good spokesmen like that too. You know, we have the possibility of telling the truth. And I think somewhere in our history, the United States has done that. And we have to recover that. We have to reestablish that and be a good country again, because we aren't one now.
Right. All right, here, just for laughs, because it's so absurd, is the aforementioned Matt Miller, when asked about the Hannibal Directive, cut number 14.
I wanted to ask you first if you read or heard about the Haaretz report on Israel employing the Hannibal Directive on October 7th.
So I did see that report that moved over the weekend, and that's the limit of my knowledge of seeing that report from Haaretz.
Does that make you change your position or your perspective on what really happened that day, that the Israelis may be responsible for killing a majority of the people that died on that day?
Boy, it certainly does not, Saeed. I don't think there's any question okay. that it was Hamas. Just let me finish. I don't think it's any question it's Hamas that is responsible for the overwhelming number of deaths on October 7th.
The joke.
Yeah, well, I was looking for the gun that's pointed at his head from behind the podium as he spoke. He seemed extremely nervous. And also, he acted like this came out this weekend. Certainly news of it is out this weekend, but this has been discussed almost.
Max Blumenthal and Aaron Mate revealed this 8.5 months ago,
yes,
but Haaretz wrote a report this weekend, yeah, which revealed the actual emails and texts showing irrefutably that it was done. And the United States refuses to acknowledge that.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. Not only is this guy a goofball, he's not doing his job, and he's not being honest. Karen, it's a pleasure, my dear friend. I'm off for 2 weeks, so I'll see you in a couple of weeks. I'm gonna look forward very much to having you back on at the end of July.
Okay, sounds great.
Thank you,
Judge.
Sure, all the best, my dear friend. Coming up at 4:30 this afternoon, Scott Ritter, Judge Napolitano.